everyone. Welcome to the Incubator Podcast. This is your co-host, Sabir Saran.
And I'm Darren Boyd. And today we are very fortunate to have a special guest with us today, Od Rotem from K2VU. Now, Od has been with K2VU 12 plus years. He's held many, many roles. He's the chief product evangelist. I've heard Od speak in the past. Very, very eloquent speaker. Love what he has to say. And he's an absolute expert in the domain we're going to cover, which is really data masking and all the things that surround it. We'll probably pay a particular focus on test data management as we get into this. But love listening to Od. We're very fortunate to have him on. Od, maybe we'll turn it over to you, and you can give us a little bit of your background, how you got here, and a little bit about K2VU as well.
Well, hi, everyone. Well, first, thanks for having me. Od Rotem, as you mentioned, I'm a chief product evangelist for K2VU. So my work has me meet with different customers all over the world, multiple customers a day, to understand their needs, their challenges, their vision. And I use it to help work with our product to build the market solutions that address all these different needs. I've been with K2VU for the past 13 plus years now. Time flies. There, and when we just met the first time, it was 12 years. Time has passed since. In different roles in the organization, I was one of the first people in the company. All of them are around the technology and the architecture and the solutioning. And I've been about 20 years or so in the market around data integration, data movement, migration, masking, test data management, and et cetera. And I work for K2VU. K2VU, it's a company that offers a very unique and robust data management platform that looks at data in a unique way. And enables you to offer all sorts of use cases, all the way from non-real-time or non-operational use case, such as TDM and masking that we're going to cover today, all the way through operational use cases, such as 360. And we're catered to some of the largest and most complex enterprises in the world.
Thanks, Od. That's a lifetime, 13 years. I've worked with Darren for a few years, and it feels like 80. And So 13 years specifically with K2VU, but 20 years in the general domain, quite profound. So truly, you get this space. And for our listeners, I think it would be helpful because everybody's heard terms of like data obfuscation or data masking. So what are we really talking about in the most simplistic way before we go further into terms like test data management?
Yeah, so very simply, data masking, it's all around security. It's all around making sure that what's called PII, personal identifiable information, any piece of data that identifies you as a customer can be secured, can be masked, so no one can actually figure out who you are and break this information in order to use it for a negative way.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we So you're in a realm that's always a hot topic. Data privacy is such a, it's an ever evolving landscape, and we're seeing stricter and stricter rules. We've all talked, Od, I can't believe how many different regulations actually apply to this. And there's so many different approaches. We're seeing a lot of leaders in Europe kind of cascading some of those regulations onto folks in the U.S. Every state is different. There's federal mandates. So it's a really complex area. And when we look at something like data masking, especially today when we're seeing some of these regulatory bodies impart rules such as, I don't necessarily need to identify Od in a data set. I just need to single out the data set. Makes it very complex from a masking perspective and a data privacy in general. So maybe
it's even more complex considering the fact that the regulations sometimes conflict with one another.
That's fair too, yeah.
A state regulation and a government regulation that might not be applying the same restrictions. So yeah, there's a lot of constraints and a lot of complexity around how data gets secured and how data gets masked.
Well, and then we also have the challenge of, I can take a data set today, and even if I obfuscate it, if I start combining it with other data sets to do more comprehensive tests, I've completely changed the context of the security landscape. And I could have introduced, even though all of the individual data sets are masked, that combination could create a very different security platform for us. And it could have me exposed, even though I think I'm doing everything right. But maybe we can start with, if we look at data masking, there's different ways to do data masking. There's all sorts of generators. Some of them are very simple. Some of them are much more complex. There's static, there's dynamic, there's in-mem, there's on-the-fly, there's all these different approaches. So when you look at data masking as a concept, what are some of the things that either K2View can provide in this space, or how do you think of all of those different permutations and options available, and how should an enterprise start to approach a data masking capability?
Yeah, before we dive into the types of data masking, it's important to understand that there's a differentiator between how data gets masked and what type of data we mask. And regardless of the type of data masking that we'll talk about in a second, there's generally two forms of data masking, dynamic and static. They all need to support the different forms of data. So whether it's structured data, traditionally identified by table or structure, data that have predefined schema and structure, traditionally a column in a table in a database, or semi-structured data, these are dynamic type of schemas that can change. JSON, XML, HTML, email format, graph format, all the way to unstructured data. These are the PDFs and Words and Excels and images and audio files of the world, things that completely have no structure at all. And whether you're using static or dynamic masking that I'll touch on in a second, they all have to support the different format of data. Now, as I mentioned, there are generally two types of data masking. There's what's known as static data masking. This is what's called masking in place. This is masking the data in the storage layer wherever data is stored. So whether I'm updating the data itself and securing and masking it, whether I'm copying, masking, and loading the data to some testing environment, which is more applicable for the world of test data management, the data, when it's stored in the storage layer, has already gone to masking. And even here, in static masking, there are two sublayers. There's what's called predefined data, data static masking, which is I have identified in advance what are the different fields and columns and files and where in the PDF I need to mask first name and where in the Excel I need to mask a driver license. And now I'm just going through the process. I'm going to that file, I'm going to that table, and I'm applying the masking. And then there's an on-the-fly type of data masking where as I'm reading the data, I need to analyze it, and I need to discover where PII might reside, and then I need to mask it before it's placed in storage. Similar to that, there's also what's called dynamic masking. Dynamic masking, unlike static that is masked in storage, dynamic doesn't actually mask the data in storage. It masks it on the request. Somebody is asking for the data traditionally stored unmasked in the original system of record, and then depending on who's asking for the data, and what type of permission that user, end user has, the data will go dynamically through masking. So both me and Darren are asking for the same unit of data, but Darren is allowed to see the real information, so he gets the original data back, and Hod is not allowed to see the real data, so on the fly, data gets masked before the reply is sent back to Hod. Now, when it comes to this level of dynamic masking, there's added complexity because it's not just based on who's the end user, right? The role and the group that Darren is part of that is allowed to see the real data. It can also get into areas where the different attributes apply to dynamic masking. So in the US, Darren is allowed to see the real data. But if Darren calls the data while he's traveling to Europe, he needs to get back mask information. So the attributes or who's calling, where they're calling, what's their role, what their team, all play part in this area that is called dynamic masking. And on the same dynamic masking, you also have these two sub-layers, the cases where the data is predefined and you know how to mask it in advance, or that as the data is being retrieved, we analyze it, discover what PII information it is, and mask it before we send it back to the customer.
I'd say in reality, nobody trusts Darren with data, but I love the I love the example.
A different order in the
well, therein lies the complexity. So, Hod, how are organizations or enterprises addressing this? Right, because it, like you said, there's everything from regulatory or policy conflicts, and then there's just the organizational dynamic. That how do people wrap their head around it? Or how does your platform and your technology actually make it a much easier process to structure and deploy?
Well, there's different layers to that answer. The majority of the market, they're addressing this by cataloging, classifying, and predefining the data when it comes to masking. So pre-analyzing all the different sources and technologies and format and identify where PII information might reside, and then tag and classify this PII to identify that this unit of data is a first name and this unit of data is a social security number. And then regardless of whether you're doing static or dynamic masking, we know in advance that the rules have been defined in advance, and it's just a measure of applying the right masking algorithm. We didn't talk about the different type of algorithms, but data reduction, data masking, data obfuscation, the pseudo-anonymization, anonymization, all sorts of algorithms that you apply on the data in order to secure it. Now, this approach of cataloging the data still doesn't really address the on-the-fly data masking. This use case where as the data get extracted, we analyze it in order to understand if it needs to be masked or not. And this is where K2View has some very unique functionality. Of course, we offer the cataloging that scans your system and help build and classify and tag all the units of data. But one of the unique things that K2View does is the way that it looks at data. Instead of thinking of data in the traditional, here is a big table of 10 million customers, another big table of 20 million addresses and a billion records in the invoice table and et cetera, we look at data from a business perspective. We essentially ask ourselves, how would the end user want to interact with the data? We don't expect the end user to understand all the complexity of all the hundreds and thousands of tables in the application and how they correlate and how they integrate and what needs to be masked. We simply ask, how would the end user want to interact with the data? If they want to ask information about a product or an invoice or a customer or an order, and this is how we manifest and collect the data. We essentially create a 360 view of the metadata and the data associated with that business entity. So if we're thinking of a customer as a unit that the end user would want to interact with, we collect from all the different systems and all the different technologies and application, all the data related to a single customer, let's say Darren in our case. And we securely store and cache it in our distributed data management platform. And that enables us to really enrich the process of discoverability. Because I collected all the data about Darren. I know his first and last name from the CRM. I know his driver license from the ordering system. I know all the information that is related to him. And I can use that for the purpose of discovering the data. So now I'm looking at a driver license that is an image. And I know that his name is Darren. So I can look in the driver license to wherever this name appears in order to mask it. Or I'm looking at a PDF file. I know his social security number. I can scan the data for the social security number. So this enables us to enrich and use this context of information that we have about the business unit, in our case, a customer, Darren, in order to discover the data more efficiently and know how to mask it. There's a lot of other benefits. I'm hoping we'll get to talk about it later on in the discussion around what this business way of looking at the data enables us to do. But this approach really gives us a unique advantage when it comes to discoverability and masking of the data.
Yeah, and that's a place where K2View plays a really significant role, being able to look at the attributes of a 360 as well as doing the other complex work of test data management, which I want to get into next. Including synthetic data, and there's so many things we can kind of pick apart there, but generally speaking, at least what we see is there's a couple things that are influencing why this is so complex today. One of them just being the regulations that we talked about, or the regulators, which generally tracks global expectation and sentiment. But the other piece that's really making this a complex thing to deal with is the idea that product teams, development teams, application teams are now moving to cloud, and they're starting to get more authority on their domain. And so, whereas we used to see yesteryear many centralized bodies kind of controlling this for an organization, now we're giving a lot of the driver capabilities into these product teams. And so now they're bringing in these data sets, and we're hammering them with this expectation that, hey, do everything you need to do, but also do it securely, safely, and don't put us at risk and exposure. And by the way, these regulations are constantly shifting and changing and getting more and more serious in terms of consequences and just expectation. So yeah. That ushers in this idea of test data management.
Exactly.
So if you can you walk us through why is this? I outlined some of the reasons why it's important now, but what is test data management and what are some of the challenges that go along with allowing people to manage their own environments, self-service, so on and so forth? If you could walk us through a little bit about that challenge.
Yeah, let's start with what is test data management, because it's a little bit of a misnomer, the word test data management. People associate with the testing organization, but in reality, it's all about getting data to anywhere that is not production. Whether it's the training environment, the development environment, the ML training system, the third-party application, the analytics system, it's all the systems that are not production data that we need data for. So test data management is all about getting data there. And you said correctly that if we go back, I wish I could say 20 years, but it's more realistically 15 or 10 years. Before the explosion of data, before the explosion of the cloud, where suddenly each customer has thousands or hundreds and thousands of different applications and petabytes of data, even back then, you know, companies were used to having two major releases a year. So they had this centralized team that you were talking about that was responsible to provision the data, to get the data to the different audience. And they would get requests from everyone that needs data, and they'll centralize the work and eventually provision it. A process that traditionally took a lot of time. We're talking about days, weeks for data to be provisioned before it's ready for you. Now, as you know, time progresses and we started seeing the explosion of data and we start to see cloud coming in, and suddenly there are dozens and hundreds and thousands of applications, different vendors, different technologies. It became impossible to utilize this centralized team. And this is kind of the progression of TDM. Test data management started with a centralized team, but when they saw that explosion, they understood that they have to pass on the responsibility to the different audience. And that's where the next stage of TDM came in, that specifically was around self-service. How do I enable the end user to self-provision the data that they need? Now, even though that process was distributed and now all the different audience can self-provision the data, the one thing that remained and should remain centralized is everything around the security or the governance or the compliance. Because you said correctly, Darren, that we can't expect the end user to understand all these regulations and complexity, and we can't explain them to follow them as they change and mature and new one comes in. So everything to do with the governance, the compliance, the security of the data still remained in this centralized place. And now you have those catalogs, those tools that kind of scan and define what needs to be masked. And the self-service is oblivious to that. An end user, a tester, should not be in a position to decide whether they want masked data or not. That's a decision of the compliance group, the security group. The self-service enabled them to move the data behind the scenes. The compliance support comes in and mask and secure all the data as it's being loaded to the target environment.
Yeah.
By the way, we're talking about TDM, and it's important to mention that it keeps growing. You mentioned the synthetic data. This is the next evolution of the test data management around the ability to generate fake data. That's what synthetic data is all about. Instead of taking the risk that maybe we got unmasked and unsecured data from production into the testing environment, let's just create fake one. Now, of course, synthetic data management is not a magic pill. It doesn't solve all the issues. There's a lot of complexity around that, but that's the next evolution of TDM. How do I create rules or data that is logically correct and connected and integrated? How do I introduce AI to this? This is coming up next. And how do I reduce the risk of eventually getting unsecure data into the testing environment? Now, you asked about some of the challenges. Sorry, Sabir, go ahead.
No, Hood, if we could pause right there, because I think it's really profound what everything you set up to date here with test data management. Ultimately, it comes down to what is that self-service experience, or commonly known these days as the developer experience, right? And we need to federate data for different types of purposes in the enterprise. Users want to be able to pick up and run and do what they need to develop applications and models and what have you. And I think that is I'll call it a tectonic shift from the centralized way of doing things. And great, policy and the structure of things still remains there. But now me as a user, developer, product team, I can do what I need to and self-service myself and in a way that is accessible and production and efficient and less risky, or let's call it secure. I think that's really important, Hood, that everything you've highlighted, and certainly, you know, building off of this, maybe where I think you were going with is right into the security aspect of things, is how do we now take it a step further with synthetic data and other aspects of pseudo anonymization and whatnot.
I'm just impressed you got that word out. I can never do that word.
Well, I had to concentrate really hard on that one. I was like, anonymization.
I think that...
I want to add to that, Sabir, that, you know, if you're looking at the trends of test data management in the market, I know it might come as a little surprise, but one of the very noticeable trends in the past couple of years is called tester and developer experience. Is how, you know, you're talking about the fact that now I have this self-service that I can use, and that opens my world. I can self-provision the data. I can be more efficient in my work. I don't have to wait for weeks until I get my data. This world around how do I keep the tester organization happy so they do their job more efficiently and they produce better and quality and higher quality releases is a big trend in the market right now.
No, that's really good. When I look at synthetic data, I think it's important to note too that we can't create data out of nothing, right? That's an important piece. Like if we're going to emulate data, then we want to start with something. We can bulk it up, but there's statistical relevance in there that we try and preserve as we're doing synthetics. But synthetics is such a friendly, it's ultimately secure. I cannot reverse engineer anything. It's not real. So that's that unto itself. Ultra secure. And if we get it right, it works in many test case scenarios. Not all, but if you want to do any performance-based testing or endurance testing or some of the unit tests and system tests, it works just fine. It means I don't have to subset that data, as an example. Like this is the ultimate, this is the pinnacle of being secure. But it's also very, very complex to get right, especially if you're creating some sort of statistical relevance. So,
you know what?
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was going to hand it over to you to just talk about this world of synthetics and where it's going, maybe.
Yeah, I think you touched on two very important notes. The first one is the fact that there is no one synthetic data generation. Synthetic data generation is a variety of different methods and models that you can use. And there isn't just one that is applicable to everything. Nowadays, whenever people think about synthetic data generation, they think about AI. That's the number one thing that they think of. But the reality is that AI cannot solve everything. If you don't have access to production data, you cannot train an AI model, you cannot use AI. If you're trying to use to create data for new functionality, a new offer, a new product that you're coming out with, you don't have data in production, customers with that product in production, you cannot train AI on that, you cannot use AI. If you're trying to use negative or create negative test cases, intentionally create bad data to see how the system react, how the system interact with negative data, AI cannot help with that as well. And what we're learning is that depending on the use case of synthetic data, you might need to apply different models or different methods of synthetic data. You mentioned that one of them is a common name that is called rule-based. The idea of creating data out of nothing. I'm not actually looking at the production data. I'm not analyzing. I'm not training an AI model. I'm just generating fake data. What you said very accurately is that there is no magic. If you want to create out of nothing, you still need to understand the valid values and the connection and the integration and how data works together. And the result of using just rule-based means that you have to put a heavy investment, a lot of resources, a lot of efforts, a labor-intensive and time-consuming activity in order to create all these rules that will generate the data to fit the exact structure that you want. So there isn't one model for synthetic data, and depending on which one you use, there might be a lot of investment associated with that.
Yeah.
By the way, this is an area where K2View has some unique functionality, because not only do we offer different modes of synthetic data to apply to all the different use cases, but we also enable you to combine them. So use something like AI to generate wonderful, powerful, you know, data, but enhance it with rule-based to enable all these use cases where AI can just not support. Use case where you have one application that has a table that holds an account balance, and another technology, another application that it holds all the invoices and the payments for that customer. The account balance is a summary of all the data that exists for that customer, for their invoices, for their payments. AI will never understand this relationship. It doesn't look at data in the context of a business entity like A2U does. It just looks at data. So he does not know that combining all these invoices amounts and reducing the payments that were made has to match this value here in another technology, in another table. That's where the combination of rules and AI can provide a lot of value.
Now, when you and I want to come back to kind of a philosophical question here in a moment, but when you look at now combining it all together, this is where I think K2View is really, really in a unique position. When you're looking at getting that 360, pulling in all these data sets from the metadata and creating this 360, then doing it securely, locking that down, making sure that we have all the right controls, then adding on top of that a dynamic masking capability so that you can look based on attributes, as you said, where you are, what you're doing, what device you're on and so forth, to access that data and get either exposure to the underlying or some obfuscated mechanism. And then also looking at now copying that and making sure that the copies have the right test data in it, whether it's synthetic or real, whether it's subsetted or full. Putting all that together is a massively complex endeavor, and that's something that you started in that space. You've been pioneering in that space, and you've got some really, really large and significant customers. And I do want to come back to that, but just before we do, something that we run into all the time, and I think every organization runs into this, is finding the balance between having an ultra-secure environment and having data with utility. And there is a slider, and everybody's tolerance for where that slider goes, I think, is slightly different. But generally speaking, Hod, what are some of your opinions, or what are some of the ways that you can find where that slider should be in a particular organization? Because if I make it too secure, it's probably not that usable. If I make it too usable, it's definitely not that secure. How do you start thinking about that dynamic, and where should enterprises put their minds and efforts when they want to find where their tolerance is?
You know, you're describing the reality of the world, right? That you kind of have to figure out where to put this spectrum in terms of, and it kind of touched base on some of the questions that Sabir was asking earlier about what are the challenges, and masking, especially the utilization of masking, is one of them. The reality is that we see a pretty wide range of how companies address this. There are companies that are, security is the number one thing in the world. A lot around financial organization where they don't care, it's not utilized, it's not usability to use the data as long as it's secured. And there are companies that are willing to kind of put the gauge a little bit toward the utility of that. I will say, though, that you don't have to compromise, you don't have to pick and choose. There are mechanisms and there are technologies, and K2View is one of them, that enables you to still be secured while you keep the utilization of the data. So let's answer Sabir's question about some of the challenges that we see in test data management, and we'll talk specifically around the world of masking. So first, it's the first challenge is around all the technologies. Nowadays, we mentioned there are cloud that involved. There, every organization, every company we work with has one of each technology that was ever made, and they're looking into the newest technology that are coming out tomorrow. So you need to be able to support all these technologies. You need to be able to support all the different formats, structured, semi-structured, unstructured, that we talked about before. And the first challenge is, how do you discover the data, right? How this concept called PII discovery, personal identifiable information discovery. How do you know that in this PDF file, in this location, you have your social security number? Now, once you discover it, it doesn't make the process of securing and masking it a lot easier, because to your point, you need the data to be usable. First, you need it to be consistent. If I mask Sabir's social security number in the PDF file, it has to match to the social security that I masked in the table in another system. Otherwise, the data won't integrate. But if we do something that every time I get, let's take a name, every time I get Sabir I produce Darren, you might think, yeah, I mask the data. But in reality, you're not very secure, because if ever you're able to break the Darren Minsabir, you broke it for all your customers. So it's not enough to say, I'm taking John and I'm creating Steve. You might have to do it. John go to Steve for customer number one, and it goes to Hod for customer number two. It's still masked and still secure. The relationship is still there, but the ability to break the data back is almost impossible. Again, this is where this business context comes in. By the way, another challenge associated with the consistency of the data is the uniqueness of it. So I mask Sabir's social security number to a valid new random social security number. How do I know that that new value doesn't exist in some other system that the company merged with? So I cannot just assume that the value is unique. I have to be able to confirm that the uniqueness of this and the data across the organization. Something that is called consistency across field. If I mask John Smith to Hod Rotem, that's my name, the email address should also be hod.rotem@companyname.com. Now we get into the usability. Okay, so I was able to mask and I did it in secure and I did it in a unique way. Can I actually use it? The first challenge associated with usability is what we call logical masking. It's the ability to maintain the format. So if in the system, the social security is 3-2-4, the mask value should look the same. If I just randomly make it into an encrypted value gibberish, to your point, it's not usable. The system will break. It doesn't expect this format. It expects a 3-2-4. Same thing with the likes of maybe a credit card. I'm asking a credit card. The system might expect a valid credit card. The credit card provider, the length of the credit card, the checksum, the last digit that is calculated in a certain algorithm. And then you have these cases where you even need to consider the cross systems and cross-field usability. So if I mask the address and I moved you from California to Texas where I live, do we still offer the same product in Texas? The fact that you have this product associated with your account and now your address is in Texas, in Dallas, is it logical? Is it consistent? Is it usability? Is it correct? So these are all those type of challenges that, to your point from before, by looking at the data from a 360 perspective and understanding the relationship, you can ensure the security, keeping the data formatted correctly and secured and the right checksum algorithm, the right values, keep it consistent across all the systems and keeping the data consistent so things like address move don't actually break the data apart.
Wow. So thanks for elaborating all the challenges. So coming back, I guess, again, to K2View, how does K2View, you covered one major part of that, which is the 360 view, the data discovery and all of this stuff. How does K2View actually enable and bring this together or make it manageable for an enterprise or any organization to do data masking at scale?
So yeah, so of course, K2View, you offer the traditional, I'm just going to look at data as data, the way that many other companies do. I'm looking at the data, I see John, I mask it into Steve. But the fact that we can look at the data from this 360 perspective, we, of course, there is a lot of automation associated with that. We kind of scan your world, we scan your system, we help in an automated way build what is a business context, what is a customer, what is your product in your organization, how does an invoice look like in your organization across the different systems and technology. And that is used to, like I said, help enrich and secure the data. Now we understand the relationship between the invoices and the payments in the first system and the account balance in the other system. So when we mask that information, we still keep the data consistent. When we generate synthetic data and we generate fake invoices and payments to it, we know to sum that information in order to populate the account value. So all of that is enabled because of that unique approach, because of how we look at the data. And we're talking about all these challenges, and these are reality. Darren was sharing reality about the fact that companies have to give up on the usability or the security because they don't have that concept, because they don't have this ability to look at the data in a business context and understand the relationship.
It's so complex. When you were describing some of the things to be mindful of, like I was thinking much more simplistically, like, hey, if I have an address at the end of the day and it says, you know, New Jersey, California, I don't know if there is a New Jersey, California, but you get it. Then, oops, I probably didn't understand the dependencies that are required as I do this masking. But when you went even further and said, do you even offer those products in California or Texas? It just gives you a huge appreciation for it's just not enough to just sweep through and change a value to another value. The interconnectedness is so complex. Again, I've seen K2View do this very well. You understand primary indexes. You give so many abilities to make these connections, to build the dependencies, so on and so forth. But it is a really complex space. And quite frankly, it's one that keeps me up at night. Data is just such a beast to address. When you look at how things are changing, Hood, just maybe in terms of where you think the future goes, or maybe what the future brings for K2View, what kinds of things keep you up at night, and where is some of your focus as a company or as an individual even in this space?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. You know, obviously where we feel that we need to improve and where we see the future are represented by a roadmap for the next few years. But really the future is focused around AI. And there's different areas where AI plays part. Even today, by the way, part of our existing offering is synthetic data based on AI. But synthetic data can play a big part in discoverability of data, and classification and profiling of data. So this is where we see the future. We see AI being the general approach moving forward, but we see it integrating in different areas across the discoverability, the catalog, the profiling of the data, the classification, the tagging, all the way through how I actually create fake and synthetic data, how I correlate it to the other methods and modes that we talked about before. And this is where K2View is investing heavily in the next year.
Yeah, it's the, I guess, the Gen AI world and use cases and models and the security implications, like we talked about, the slider of scale and between usability and functionality and security there. So, but I think, Hood, based on today's conversation, I think we could go pretty much for a much longer time period and ask all the intricacies. But what you've summarized is a tremendous value proposition that focuses around where, let's say, where the cheese is moving in terms of data and really making it usable from the developer's experience side of things. So we are very excited to share this with our audience about what the value K2View really brings and its use cases in this brave new world of data, or expanding world of data, I should say, not new, but it's expanding certainly into AI. So thank you so much for spending the time here with us, and we look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Thank you.
Always great to chat, Oud. We'll have you back.
Take care.
All right. Thank you.